Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to have some starting comments and news, after which we're going to have a nice little discussion on driver versus deck versus medical. We're going to discuss the upcoming changes to the 1.0 restricted list. And finally, we'll have some closing comments.
Well, John, it's episode 35, and as usual with episodes starting with a number, I have to start off with an apology. I have to start off with an apology to Aaron Glazer.
Oh, God, don't ever apologize. We've retracted the apology, Aaron. He's not sorry. In fact, you deserved whatever he did to you. No, don't say any more. Move on.
In last week's episode...
Alex, stop.
I mentioned someone had given me a deck and a Stark Martell. I didn't mention it was Aaron. I certainly should have. He also gave me the bones of the Lannister No Agenda.
I built the Lannister.
Another one I was working on.
It doesn't count.
Yeah, another one I was building with you as well.
Exactly.
But he certainly influenced that process, so I felt he deserved mention. And it's nice to see that after that, I mean, we got a lot of comments on last week's episode. We weren't thinking it was going to be as controversial. You actually cut the rules segment that we were talking about, the tournament rules, and what did you call the file name?
Another
like boring
really
rule stuff,
boring
something?
Segment.
We got 76 comments on that episode. I think mostly because there was sort of this carryover from the episode before where people were still...
Which we got even more than 76 comments?
Well, so people were still thinking about this from the DC perspective and whether it was...
Let's talk about something important, all right? Team Covenant. I got some tokens, and I know you were saying they were good, Alex, but these things are awesome. They're, like, soft on the edges. They're stylized. They fit perfectly on my play card. If you guys want to do power counters and you're playing Game of Thrones, or you know what, you just want cool power counters for anything, go to Team Covenant. Buy these things. They're amazing.
Team Covenant and Steven specifically actually contacted us and asked for our address and said they wanted to send us some so we could have a look at these tokens. And... You know, we talked about the tokens even before that last week, and they sent us a demo set, so two of each, so we could have a look at them. And on top of that, they sent us a handwritten note, you know, specifically tailored to us that was extremely polite and very nice. It was going the extra mile. I was extremely impressed with that. As for the tokens,
yeah, me too.
The tokens themselves, you know, I don't really like the Night's Watch ones. I think they're a little too bland. I have mixed feelings favorite, but the Tyrell ones I find are absolutely phenomenal, and I really like the Martell ones, which I didn't think I would from having seen them on the website, but the way they're cut out here, I actually really quite like them, as well as the Vera and the Greyjoy ones.
When I saw them on the website, I'm like, I was thinking like wood and that they'd be kind of like grainy or I get splinters or something. Well, not splinters, but you know, that they'd have a weird feel to them because I kind of like to play with my cards and tokens between when I'm playing the game. But they're smooth. They're like nice.
Nice.
So I can still stack them and fiddle with them and stuff like I would with poker chips. And to me, that's important because I need that. I need that tactile part of the
tactical
game.
Tactical, yes, excellent. One of the nice things, and we mentioned it last week as well, is that they do size up perfectly 3x5 on a playing card so that you can have all 15 power on your house card if you don't have renown. Like, I don't know how often that matters, but it's nice for organization. It's nice so that you're not hiding. I know that we've talked about players on the cast that, you know, have 16 power tokens out or something so that when you count the ones they don't have on their card, it's wrong.
Because you can't see exactly what's on their card because they're all over the place, too big. Like, when I won the Stark tokens for FFG, that's what I found was a little irritating, that they wouldn't fit on a card, that I had to stack them. So it was harder for my opponent to know how many power I had. These ones are great. So if you're buying some product, you're buying some booster packs, you're buying the new core, you're buying some counters, check out Team Covenant. We're going to put a link. Go there. you know, buy those counters if you're interested in counters.
I do want to reiterate, they are fantastic people. We've mentioned their coverage of Gen Con, of Worlds, and so on. I also want to state that, personally, we will in the next couple of weeks, I'll be giving out the set that I received as a prize on the cast. I don't generally use custom power tokens, and I really like these, but I also don't really feel like the cast should be a place where I'm making, you know, accumulating swag just because I'm running the cast. I'm really happy to have a look at these, share with the community my experience, and then have someone in the community pick them up.
You know, since we're talking about prizes, I'll do the same with my power counters, and on top of that, for Mikey just contacted me, and he said that he was getting rid of some of his swag, and he came across some of the stone house cards that I had given to him, and that he was willing to give those back to the cast since he wasn't using them as prizes. So we have a Greyjoy stone house card. I'm not sure exactly what the competition will be for that, but we're definitely going to be giving it out soon.
Excellent. So yeah, we'll after the game has released, we'll start flogging some of these things. Hopefully, once every week or every 2 weeks, we'll have something that we can get people participating in. Because I'm not going to lie, it's been really good seeing 70 comments to our cast. You know, we weren't trying to find controversy, but it's really nice to have that interaction.
So, other news.
Well, the number one news is
Shalik.
Right? No, that's still ages away.
Yeah, but they have like 219 people already registered.
They had like 219 people registered 4 months ago. That's not news.
Ugh.
It's still awesome. It's just not news.
It's awesome.
The big news is that 2.0 is shipping now. And by shipping now, I mean as of like Monday last week, the day that we, which means it's arriving in stores fairly quickly. My local store says they'll have it on Friday the 9th. A lot of other people have been told the 5th and the 6th. FFG is actually running a...
The 14th.
Yeah.
I got ripped off the 14th.
FFG is actually running a like opening tournament at their event center on the 6th. That Nate will be there, and they'll be handing out Kingslayer alt art cards as well. So if you're in the Minnesota area, that's a thing. But yeah, my store said they have the cards.
And if you're listening to this and you're in the Minnesota area and you want to send us some alt art cards that we can give away on the cast, that would be awesome.
Nice. Now
talk
to Nate.
Say Beyond
out.
The
yeah,
Wall
good.
Once.
We will try to accumulate prize support. But I also heard from a couple of localization international setups. Actually, really only from one, but in France, the French version of the game has a street date of the 17th of October. So I think they'll have the English version of the game, you know, sometime next week, but the French version will also be this month. So that's good to hear as well.
I heard some people actually have the French version. I heard it's in their warehouses, and some have leaked out.
Some have leaked out, the French version. The ones.
Yeah.
Well, I've...
That's my underground French connection info.
I have some underground French connection info, but I can't share it. So.
Oh, you got more. Why can't you share it?
Why can't I share it? So, moving on. on top of that, we also got information for the demo kits, and this week we got information for the store championships. I'm still dying. So the store championships lineup is before October 16th, and I know that the game isn't even released yet, but I talked to my store, and you know that I've been interacting with, that I've been printing out these tickets to add, as we suggested last week. I've got these nice Beyond the Wall related cards to give out with the cores, and I asked them, "Are you guys getting the demo kits?" They said, "Yep, we already ordered them." I told them about store championships. 2 minutes later, I had an email saying, "Yep, we're willing to commit to this year to the store championships. We think the product will be big enough that we can justify that, even though the product's not in the stores yet." So it's worth asking. Ask your store. Find out. Have you had a look at the prizes?
I have looked at the prizes, and I talked to my store, and the store that I go to that's closest to my work actually told me they will not do a store championship.
They will not do a store championship?
Because the product's not out, and they don't know how many players they're going to have. Isn't that
just
horrible?
Tell them you'll pay the difference.
I told them I'd buy the whole freaking kit. It's like $45.
I think it's a slightly more than that, but it doesn't take them much to recover it with the admission.
I said I would just buy it, and they were like, well, we don't want to have people coming, there's nothing going on, we don't want to book our store, you know, we could have a magic event, or it's like, so I'll have to check out other stores.
Yeah.
That was Phantom 2, don't shop there, Ottawa.
I do like that for the store championships, they've reduced the size of the plaques to small black ones, little bigger.
Yeah, I didn't like those big plaques.
I did not like the big ones. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the plaques in general, but I certainly prefer these ones. I think they're much better. because they're smaller. But I think that playmat looks quite neat. It's definitely very Tyrell-y. They mentioned that there's going to be an alternate art Eerie card. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen an Eerie card spoiled yet, so presumably it's in the
first chapter pack.
Chapter packs, because if it's not, we're getting it possibly before it's even out. Which
that would actually be really cool.
That would be actually kind of cool. You could
play with it before it came out in the chapter pack.
I don't know if you could.
Oh, yeah, you could, of course. It's a legal card.
Maybe.
It's a legal card.
I guess we haven't seen the tournament rules. Maybe they'll specifically outlaw the Eerie, and then they can...
But otherwise, that'd be awesome.
That would be kind of nice. And I do know that in a lot of other games, they've been making a solid effort to have the alt art cards support organized play directly. So, for instance, in Netrunner, there's a card that everybody needs that they run a lot of that's in a chapter pack that's been out of print for a while. Mm-hmm. And so they made it the card for, the last regional season or something like that, the Jackson Howard. I don't know exactly what it was, but that they're actually taking that kind of thing into account. So maybe the Eerie is a card that you're likely to run in multiple decks or something like that. They're saying, hey, you know, if it's something that you'll like to have three of, then maybe that should be our prize for store championships. I hope so. I mean, I don't necessarily hope that the Eerie is a card that you see in every deck, because that doesn't really feel like the Eerie, but I hope that they do take into account that kind of thing and say, hey, you know, you're running these things all over the place. You might need a fourth copy of... more news that is good for all this shipping and stuff coming out on time, and FFG may be having their act together. CP1, the first chapter pack, is on the boat. So it's on schedule and on track for mid-November release like they said it would be. And the second chapter pack moved to the printer that same day, so it would be on track for a release in December. So it looks like at least they're holding to that schedule.
Good stuff.
Another point about schedule, because I know you, every time I mention that the first chapter pack is coming out in November, you're like, so that means at most one for Worlds. Apparently a bunch of Worlds tickets were released for a bunch of events this week. I think that's the ones they were holding for world champions and people, important people, are now going out to the plebs. No, I'm joking.
Yours is gone.
Alex. Mine is probably gone. Aoria was saying that. He said, you know, my ticket is now available, I think. Alvaro Rodriguez won't be coming this year. So I don't know if they've all already disappeared, sadly. I haven't gone through the quagmire of the registration process, but I do know there were a bunch of them that opened up like 2 or 3 days before we recorded. So it's worth checking out if you still have your heart set on some of the events at Worlds.
Talking about Worlds, did you see the cool wooden house cards for the best of each house for the 2.0?
There's a set of wooden house cards there. Yeah. I see all the playmats. In fact, I'm not terribly impressed with the playmats.
No, the wooden house cards look
great.
The
wooden house cards look great. And that
I'd almost take a house that I think no one else would play in 2.0 just to win that wooden house card.
And I mean, I like that they decided to do acrylic tokens for things they haven't done yet. So they've got the...
Man, your cold's way worse than mine.
It's been awful. So yeah, they've got the Joust prizes, which includes the Greyjoy acrylic tokens. They've got the... which we haven't seen before. They've got melee prizes, and then they've got the Kingslayer prize, or not the Kingslayer, the War of the Five Kings prizes, which are alt art Eddards, which look pretty neat. Yep. House cards as well for all 8 factions with the new logos, wooden house cards, and then Night's Watch tokens, which obviously we've never seen before. So that I'm a little really wanted those. I have tokens for every faction that has come out so far, and those the acrylic ones and. It feels like the completionist in me really wants those and probably won't ever see them. It does look like some pretty neat attempt at some prize support. The wooden house cards is a nice touch.
I really like the wooden house cards for each faction.
I mean, last year they did do this. They gave out Shire Post Mint coins as tokens for the highest placing in each house, which was the first year they've ever done this, even though it's quite common in a lot of European.
This is more sexy.
Well, it's in-house, which is nice. I really liked it last year. It wasn't announced, and they added this in as a prize. I think the final touch that I'd like them to add is to reward people who play the same faction in both Melee and Joust.
Yeah, like a loyalty prize.
Exactly, a loyalty prize for the highest placing who played the same faction of both, because I think that's another neat thing that you can do with this game that that would be worth rewarding. But it is nice to see them do this because it's not something they did in the past. The cue that they're picking up from fan-run tournaments in Europe, primarily, to say, hey, you know, if you just want to be the best Greyjoy player you can be, and this is not a good year for Greyjoy, you can still win prizes that way.
Yep.
And that's important. The last thing that I want to talk about before we move into our segments is the new chapter pack that was announced, the No Middle Ground fourth chapter pack in the cycle. Unfortunately, the first thing that jumps out at me about this chapter pack is that art on Halder, which is horrific.
Yeah, real bad. Oh, my God. Why did they do that?
Absolutely awful. But
actually, the art has gone downhill in general in this pack.
Well, Priest of the Drowned God is very nice. I don't really mind the arbor.
The arbor is lame. It's not detailed enough. The whatever that is, Lannister card there in the back for one gold, bad. Maester Starfall, okay.
Priest of the Drowned God is nice, though. And then if you scroll down later, you get the event loot, which has pretty nice art on it. I think that's pretty nice. And then we have the personal winter, which you can't criticize the art on that because they had to reprint it with that art, right? They didn't have a choice.
Right.
John Bruno being eaten alive. But as for cards, we don't need to go into too much detail, but I think personal winter coming back is a big, big deal.
Without Val in the environment, it's huge, right?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. I'm really glad to see it be the version from the LCG rather than the CCG that did the mass discard. Because I think that the bouncing to hand does become much more interesting with reserve.
With the reserve, yeah.
With ambush, with the way all these mechanics play. And I think
you don't want to run into a Wrath in their midst with this card, though.
Wraith in their midst, that's right. The plot that reduces reserve, which is a neat interaction as well. So I have really high hopes for how this card plays out. I think there's a lot of tricks. You know, bouncing a character that has a come-into-play effect, obviously, or bouncing Jorah to just reuse him so you weren't going to lose him to the discard pile, as well as playing around with ambush characters, getting more mileage out of them. It's just fun. I really enjoy that, and I think that it'll be more fun in second edition than it was in first edition. And it makes sense to see it go up to the printed cost 3 threshold, given the way characters are. I do think I'd like to talk about that loot card, though. The Greyjoy event?
Yeah.
Because I think it's awesome from a design standpoint. I still don't think it's necessarily a good card. I feel really interested by it. So the idea, for those of you who haven't seen the card, is it's an event that costs X, except that you can only pay the X using your opponent's gold, and it's a reaction to winning an unopposed challenge, and then it says discard the top X cards from the losing opponent's deck.
Now, you eat all their gold.
Let's be clear. Yeah, that's what this effect does. It steals all their gold, or uses all their gold. It depletes their gold pool. That is an interesting effect. The fact that it mills cards from the deck, minor synergy with a couple other cards, and down the road it might matter, but if you want to make mill interesting to me, this is the kind of card you need, where mill is a peripheral effect, or where there are some secondary effects that interact with it later, rather than a card that's trying to mill. And this is a card that's trying to deprive your opponent of gold, and happens to mill. I really like that design. The question is this playable against anyone but Lannister?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you have to be really trying to force your opponent in some way to have that extra goal. You know, Fear Winter was back in the game. Then you could play this on your Fear turn and get a whole bunch of gold, probably.
Yeah, exactly. But it would be your only card on that Fear turn, so it's still a bit of a gamble.
Yeah.
So, I think it's a really interesting design. I'm glad to see that it's not just slapping the pillage keyword on a bunch of characters and telling you, look, mill will eventually build itself, because it won't. But cards like this, I really like. And the fact that I'm even saying that about a card with a mill effect probably means that Nate is sitting there laughing at me if he listens.
But honestly, it's not good. Yet.
And finally, I guess that you mentioned the Wraiths in Their Midst card.
Yeah, I like this.
So this is the plot that reduces your opponent's reserve by 2 to a minimum of 2.
Which is the first time we've really seen a plot affect reserve, right?
It is. We've only seen one card affect reserve, and that's Asha Greyjoy so far. And she's only if you're the first player, and it's only by one.
Asha?
Asha. Lannis Greyjoy, sir.
There we go.
Yeah. I think this one is interesting. Is it enough gold to use it as an opener? And that most of the reserve openers are either 5 or 6, so you'll gain a one-card advantage, maybe 2, depending on
Yeah, it's tough. That's
it's interesting, but it is an interesting spot because you.
If this was by three reserve, it would be great. If it was by one, it'd be useless. It's kind of like, I'm not sure. I need to play with it.
Which is a good place for a card to be. I mean, it may wind up being lousy or great, but
if had one more gold
instantly. That's good.
I feel like it's just missing a little something. One gold or another reserve down, or I don't know, something.
I do like that to a minimum of two. I think they must have been thinking of melee.
Yes.
If two or three people had revealed race in their midst, then everyone has to just ditch their hand.
That'd be so funny.
That would be pretty horrific. That would be a highly NP experience. Anyway, so that would be Chapter Pack 4, which I guess is expected in February. So that's when we get another reset.
Here we are. Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're joined by Little C, Steven Simone, and of course the hyena is with us. You guys are all here for a reason today, and what we're going to be doing is we're going to talking about the difference between player skill, the skill to build a deck, and the skill that's required to call the meta correctly, and how important each of those things are for your overall win rate in Game of Thrones. And before we talk about reasons and all that, what I want to do is I want to ask you each the same question. You have to answer concisely, and it is, what's the most important? Is it player skill, the deck that you're using in that tournament, how you call the meta, or is it evenly split amongst the three of them? So you have four answers you can pick from, Stephen. I don't want to hear like a two-paragraph answer here. What is it?
Are we starting with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Because you're really boxing us in here, but I will follow your rules. All right. The most important thing is player skill.
Alex.
Player skill.
Seth.
I just know the meta call doesn't matter. The other two are both important.
Okay. I'm with deck. I think deck's a little bit more important than player skill.
All right.
All right. So now let's talk about why we answered these this way. Now that the listeners know what we're talking about. So, Simone, tell us why you think player skill, and maybe Alex can help you out with this argument. Why is player skill more important than calling the meta or deck building?
Okay, before we do that, let's just first we need to, for the listeners here, get the same definition of meta call. What is a meta call? Can you answer that, Naj, just so I know what we're talking about here?
Yeah, absolutely. So calling the meta is anticipating the three or four most strongest decks that are going to show up that you think you're going to see after the cut, in that winner's circle of top 16, top 32, whatever it is at a major event. And you want to be prepared for those decks in order to ensure that the deck you're playing can beat them.
Is a meta call about the best cards and decks theoretically, like based on the restricted list, or are you predicting what other players will play? Which is more important?
You're predicting what the other players will play. So you, like, for instance, you could say a meta call at the Worlds that DC did so well in and won for Joust would have been to call the Lannister DW deck. If everyone knew that you were bringing the Lannister DW deck before and they made that correct meta call, then the likelihood of you actually getting through the top 16 would have been much more limited.
Okay. So I have a nuanced point here, and we'll keep. I don't want to keep this podcast too long, but the nuanced point I have is I have a different definition of the meta call. Meta call in games are completely separate from the players. There is a meta that exists based on the restricted list and the current card pool of that game. So take 3,000 cards in Game of Thrones or whatever, plus whatever the current restricted list, there is a meta of decks at any given time that are the best that exist in the world independent of the players who can conceive those decks.
Right, but all those decks won't show up at the tournament you're going to. You know that if New York is showing up to an event, there's more likely to be higher representation of Targaryen than there would be at normal events, and that's the meta of that tournament. It can matter. You wouldn't take a deck that was extremely susceptible to burn to a New York regional, even if burn wasn't some of the best decks around, because there would be people that would be making the top 16 that would definitely be playing burn.
So here's what I got. So we'll go back to me then. In that context, we have a bit of discrepancy there, but in the context of why I said player skill, it's because, I think meta call is, or making the right meta choice is definitely in last place, and that's because I believe that when you're making a meta call, you're basically setting yourself up for failure because you need to just choose whatever you think the best deck is, just in general, in the general case. So that's why I left Meta Call out. Why I'm saying player skill actually trumps deck building is because I think the most important thing to do in an event is to make the cut. And I believe that a lot of the decks, I'll explain why it's to make the cut in a second, but a lot of the decks you choose
are pretty close
to each other. And so you can get a deck that's decent enough to make the cut, even without a large group like DC has. You can get it as long as your player skill is adequate. And once you make the cut, it's just like the NFL playoffs. Anything can happen.
Now, I'll elaborate on another technicality. The reason that I think that deck building doesn't matter is the way you phrased the question. I don't think it matters very much that you have the skills to build your deck. I think deck choice might be something different. And had you asked me deck choice, my answer might have changed. But I don't think that deck building, which is a skill,
did the hyena just rules me? Like, he rules me on the question.
No, but deck choice is medical. Deck choice is medical. No,
what he means is if the best deck builder in the world, so Corey Faraday hands you the perfect deck, and he says, this is the best deck. You didn't really build that. And so he's saying, is it important that you know how to build the deck if you can have the best builder in the world hand it to you as long as you get X number of repetition in and you're a great player? Okay, I can see Alex's point, but what I was trying to get at with
that
was actually
the skill or calling the meta. Those are the three things.
The deck itself, the deck itself. Not the fact that you built it, just that someone with an adequate skill built it.
Don't hyena lawyer rules.
Don't lawyer. You knew what I meant.
In that case, my arguments are quite similar to Simone. Obviously, value the deck choice in relation to the meta more. I think that, for instance, in an environment where maybe even if you didn't think that the old way was going to be the best deck, you needed to have some way, knowing that 20 or 30% of the field is going to be that, to make sure you can counter it. And in a way, that does determine what the best deck is. If your deck doesn't have an answer to 30% of the field, it's not the best deck. But that is different in different fields. So I think that's certainly important, but I agree that player skill matters a lot more. I think that we've seen strong players rise to the top of tournaments with suboptimal decks on a regular basis. I think we've seen a vast number of players.
Really? Have we seen that? I think I agree with you.
Yes, we certainly have. And we've seen him do it regularly.
Yeah, we see Naj come into the tournament with some real suboptimal deck and still roll me. Of course, he's just a good player. My chance of beating him is maybe 50-50 a lot of times.
But let's take an example that's not either flattering or insulting to Arknaj, fun though it may be. Everybody knows John Bruno, and at the beginning of the Store Championship season, for the last basically 3 years, he comes up with some deck that's original or not, something like a Noble Cause, and wins a tournament with it, and then people start to think that that deck is good.
Stop. You can't use that example. He plays in a tournament with, 12 people.
He's just the best player in that room, and they all have terrible decks.
Well, in that case, the determining factor was the best player.
Yeah, that's why Alex and I are right. I think we're done this discussion. I think we just kind of solved it.
We're not gonna look at the other side. Okay, Seth, why do you think it's equal?
I think that deck building and player skill are too closely intertwined to break apart. In my experience, I've heard the stories of Brett Zeiler back in the day. Someone used to hand him a deck and he would change two cards and just go nuts. But in my experience, the players, they're always directly related. The skill of the deck builder and the skill of the player are always very close, right next to each other. So the fact that you're playing a deck, everything that's gone into picking that deck and building that deck, evaluating it, it is reflected in your player skill. So to be this person can't build a deck but is a great player wouldn't make sense to me. I don't know how that could exist. If you evaluate the cards well to know to make the plays, then you know how to build the deck to a certain extent. That's my experience.
I don't think that's true. My counter-argument is that to be a really good player with a deck that you're told is good, you need to have a very good knowledge of those 60 cards. To be able to build a deck, you're basically cutting from a pool of 3,000. That's a much harder task.
I think why the deck building is important. I don't think it's important as player skill, but to talk about why the deck building is important here, a little devil's advocate on myself, It's one of those things. Actually, I don't want to derail us. I was going to go into a thing about how deck building, it's harder. It's really hard because I know other metas, the New York meta, they play each other to the finish line and try to beat each other in testing. They used to. Okay. They used to, in my opinion. Naj, when we tested over that summer, for Gen Con, like, we would just do 100% take back so we could find the right deck.
Yeah. I think deck building is more important. Now, I might be a little biased because it's the part of the game I enjoy the most. To me, after the cut and you run into good players, I think the difference between an exceptionally great player and a great player is marginal. I think Game of Thrones, you can only get so good with the cards you have. You can only outplay your player, your opponent, so much. And if those outplays are just little bits, it makes less of a difference than that you ran into a bad matchup after the cut, like kind of what Simone was saying, like it's anything goes after the cut, right? You hit a bad matchup and you have a bad matchup for your deck. So that's where Metacall has a little bit of value. But I agree, it's the least of all three. But if I'm playing a good deck and you're playing a bad deck, I don't care if you're Steve Simone and he's running some crappy deck that I'm going to pick off the internet from a person that's been playing the game for 3 months, versus a deck built by Corey and a random noob that's been playing this game for 3 months. That noob is going to crush you, Steve.
I don't think that's.
Wait, hold on. Question. Wait. Do I have Valor in my plot deck?
Possibly not, Steve. Possibly not.
If both decks had Valor in their plot deck, I would roll that noob.
Yeah, but you might not. That's what I'm saying. Your deck could literally be complete garbage.
Sure, if you gave me a deck with, like, Fear of Winter and Attack from the Sea and shit, I probably would lose.
But I that's an extreme example, and I agree that your player skill will compensate for a lot, especially in the circumstance I was describing. But as you move up and you get into, like, say, your average player of Game of Thrones, if you had an average deck and they had a great deck and they were an average player and you were you, I think it would be a pretty close match.
If you think of your major losses, how many of them can you trace to play mistakes? And the answer in my case is, honestly, the vast majority of them. The ones that I trace to where my deck was inferior is fewer. I mean, I may not have been playing the best deck, and the deck I was against may have been better, but I can generally trace the loss to a play mistake.
Maybe. I trace mine, actually, to... I don't. Even though I picked player skill, I don't trace my losses to play mistakes. I'm not trying to, like, brag. I feel like I don't make that many player mistakes. I'm not trying to brag. I practice the game a lot. I know what
Nightmares
I'm doing.
Nightmares on the Iron Throne, Steve.
Alvaro is a very good player. I wouldn't even call that a mistake. That's just, like, that was a gross play I would have had to make to win that game. And, like, that's more of just, like, I didn't have the right skill level. It wasn't a mistake.
Yeah, there's a difference between a mistake and not doing an exceptional play to pull it out.
Yeah.
But both are contingent on player skill.
Yes. But I can trace back a couple of my most memorable losses while I felt that I was outplaying my opponent and still lost because I felt their deck just beat me to poop.
But you think it was their deck or that your own crapped out on you? Because at that point, we're just talking random.
No. My deck was, like, my Black Sails, one of my biggest memories is against Eric Butzloff. And my Black Sails was firing on all cylinders. It was doing all right. His deck was also firing on all cylinders, and his deck was just a really tough matchup for me. So it's about pairings, you know, like every deck has some bad matchups. But it was also that I felt in that match that his deck, the DC deck that year, was superior to my deck. And
yeah,
I felt like, right, I was outplaying him. Like, he was making mistakes, a lot of mistakes at that time, I thought. And I still lost. And I just felt like I left that, and I was like, man, I just felt like I was so more, you know, again, like Steve is saying, you know, a little conceited of me that I outplayed so much better. I just got beaten by his better equipment.
Okay, let me make a
which is part of the game, too, right? It's a total, that's totally a worthy a win in my mind.
I'm trying to argue that. About meta calls. I think that that's an example of why a meta call really doesn't matter very much, because you guys made a better meta call. You played a deck with the host to shut down all the keywords, the vengeful, the renown, and stuff. You played a deck that was better against Tark Hollow Hill, which was a monster in that environment. But the Martell deck, despite not being a good meta call, was just a stronger deck, as you're saying. Like, all around, it was the stronger deck, and that's why it won.
I totally agree. And I think, and that to me showcased, because I don't think the skill gap between me and Eric, in fact, in the past, it was probably Eric that was more skilled. But in that match, I think he was starting to get rusty. He was lost.
Yeah.
I had a year he had. And he wasn't into the game as much. He wasn't practicing as much. But in that, I don't think our skills were like miles apart. There was a small enough difference in that he was able to have his advantage of his deck, which I think was about the same as our skill gap, and it still won. And to me, I just thought to myself, damn, it's the deck that means more And if it's not, it is so marginal, it's crazy.
And I want to say, as far as for newer listeners or newer players, the meta call thing again, I want to clarify, a lot of people think, as I read this on AGOT cards, a lot of people think meta call means, like, adding one copy of Bastard to your deck, or it means, like, playing Fleeing to the Wall in your plot deck. That's not a meta call, that's just putting bad cards in your deck.
If Fleeing to the Wall is needed in the actual meta, like Greater Ships is everywhere, for instance, and you know that there's going to be 30% of the field, I might not be okay with that, because a plot actually is something that you can trigger when you want, especially if your deck doesn't normally go to 7 rounds and you don't need that other slot, you have a flex slot. But to me, that's not a horrible thing. Now, adding Bastard because you hear there's Maesters around or something like that, that's, I'm kind of more with you on that, Simone.
Yeah,
I don't think it's reliable.
You see what I mean there? Like, basically, yeah. What I mean is flashing or taking a flawed deck and saying, oh, I have this pretty flawed deck, but I like it. I'm going to throw in this random card here as a meta call to deal with a deck that I have trouble with. That's not a meta call.
Yeah. Now, you can tweak it. You know, if you're always weak to Rush, there's value in tweaking your deck so that, you know, if you're winning all the other matches 100% of the time, but you're losing the match to Rush 100% of the time, tweaking your deck so you win the Rush match, you know, 50-50 and don't lose much percentage on the other matches, that's fine. But that's not a meta call. That's just making your deck better.
Well, I don't really know that that's something that can be done, though. Like, you have a deck in a certain place, and you feel like it struggles with one thing. Usually I find all you can do to make a deck better is push harder towards its strengths. When you start to pull away from the strengths to put in other cards, unless it's like a 50-50 trade, like two similar cards, one's better against one thing, one's better against the other, but a lot of times you weaken your deck overall to try and tech for some other archetype, and you think you're improving it, but then you get to the tournament thinking you've made a good meta call, and you've just made a weaker deck that loses to other decks.
Well, right, and that's
you're not always dropping it to a point where you've crippled yourself, though. I mean, I will reduce the deck that is winning this matchup 90% of the time to winning it 80% of the time to improve another matchup. And, I mean, we've done that on a number of occasions. We did that in both of the black sales that we built.
As long as you're gaining percentages, right? As long as you're gaining, like, if you're saying that, you know, I'm moving one matchup or that I expect, or several matchups like Rush or Tempo or whatever, up by 30, 40%, and all I have to do is reduce my aggro match by 10% win rate, as long as you have enough data to support that.
I don't really understand how you even would do that. Like, you put in the better cards over the worst cards. I just think there's more objective value than you're giving credit for. Like, what's an example where you, like, swapped three cards out for three other cards and it raised your percentages?
So an example of that was and I know I mentioned it last time and you sort of laughed it off, but it was one that really happened out of all of this testing, was including a second copy of Mirror Mirror in our Great Joy of Black Sails deck. It turns out that increased the odds of being able to search for him turn one, which turned out to be a really good play against the Martell matchups that we were expecting and did in fact see. And it turns out that it turned that matchup from something that we could win 15% of the time to something we could win 50% of the time.
And
just by adding that second mirror. And obviously it's a one card swap. It doesn't cripple the deck, but it almost guarantees that you can pull off that first turn search for him or have him in hand with your mulligan condition.
Sure. I think you just made the deck better, probably.
We made the deck better against Martell, but a second copy of Mirror Mirror is pointless against everyone else.
And it gave us a small disadvantage against the other players, the other deck types, like maybe a 1% or something.
I'll stipulate to this line of argument. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, okay. It's like swapping, say we're using Parting Blow, right? And
just started bad already. Oh, no.
Okay, this is before your time because you're so young, Seth, but Parting Blow is actually useful in some of the older Martell decks before Orphan got restricted, and you had some of these things where you were removing your own characters, and Martell was notoriously bad on draw, so getting the extra draw was okay. It was like a free card with Neil because you had so much of the sacrifice tech. This is way before your time. But back then, everyone was running Parting Blow for those reasons. You get a free Neil, you get a free draw, and you had so many things leaving the table anyways, that, you know, sacrificing orphans, or people were still using the paramours and stuff back then, because the card pool was smaller, that it had value. And swapping that for Nightmares actually, all of a sudden, gave you a lot more bang for your buck against Maesters, especially in the day before Maesters had all the restrictions placed on them. So, you know, people were doing that switch, and they didn't realize it. I think it was Greg Atkinson or John Bruno that made that switch. And he said, oh, my God, just adding Nightmares brings me from, you know, like a 10% win ratio to a 50 or 60 versus Maesters with this switch, because the Neil wasn't wasn't as useful. And I guess you would say, well, Nightmares was the better card.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure in the meta if it was. You know, so, or Maesters.
Yeah. Okay, that, like I said, you guys have a point to make here. I want to talk a little more about this player skill thing, though, and I want to ask you a question, Naj. I think you're a really skilled player. Why don't you believe in yourself more and play decks that have more long game in it? Because, like, you could play this awesome long game. This goes back to my Card Game DB post I think I made about, like, kid cards, long game versus short game. I'm always looking for a deck with a lot of long game because I believe in my player skill. Whereas I see a lot of really good players just trying to play stomp you in the face plots.
I love
I'm
long game.
I'm going to preface your response, John.
Black Sails.
You were upset about at Gen Con when you had two cards set up and how unlikely that was. I feel like you're as good a player as anybody. If you were playing a deck that could survive that and had a long game, then you probably win that game.
Yeah, but the deck I was playing didn't have a long game. Simone was right. It wasn't a long game deck. But I've played long game decks in the past. It's not like I haven't before. I played lots of long game. Our Black Sails wasn't a short game deck. We had no renown. We weren't a rushy deck. We ground people out. It was several times I went to 8-9 plots with that deck. But it wasn't like, I think, Alex, how many times did you do 7 plots with the...
In that tournament, quite a few times. But I don't know if that quite argues against Simone's point, because that was a deck that had a lot of trouble coming from behind. It was a deck that needed to be able to search its holes within the first couple of turns, and from a disadvantaged position, you lose access to that.
Yeah, good point. I was about to rip into you guys until Alex just saved you there. Black Sails inherently, by the mechanic itself, means you need to win challenges.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you another example. The deck that I almost took to Gen Con, you're going to laugh, was the DC Pit. So... Right up until a week before, when I left New York and I came back, I was actually practicing the DC Pit, and that's what I was playing, and I was having a lot of fun with. But then I realized I couldn't bring that because, I mean, DC was going to bring it.
Well, you have another card design, so no one to blame but yourself.
I just mean it's like I like being unique. I like doing different things. This is the same reason I ran the friggin' Balerion Bounce deck.
Yeah. And actually, liking to being unique is actually just a quick point on that, because I think someone made a good post on AGOT cards. I think it was like Tom Damon, the small community syndrome that we suffer from.
Yeah, that was him, yeah.
This community, he had some good points there. I think I just think that I agree with him, but like small community syndrome, like small communities love to be unique. That's what draws us all into this small community and small game. We have a chance to really be unique because it's such a small community that you can find a unique deck, unlike in Magic where like everything's known.
Right, yes. Before we played it, there was no... In North America, at least, we didn't see a lot of this Targ AAA. And that's why I took it. I enjoyed it. It was something different. It was novel for me. I decided to play it. And I like those novel decks. I think if I look back at most of my Gen Con World decks, most of them are novel. You know, it's using Maesters to make Bob a Super Maester. It's the Balerion Bounce deck. It's strange combos with Lannister. You know, it's never something I think is normal because I enjoy that. It's why I ran Vera Maesters at World 1 year before they were as good as they are this year. It's fun and different.
I think that makes you irresponsible, John, because you set an example for this community, and you can give away with it because you understand metas, so you can build your own deck. But what happens is someone who has never gone through a grueling 3-month testing cycle to learn a meta and go to a big tournament, they think they have, like, their deck, and it's the deck they love, and it's their pet deck, and they try and tweak it and tweak it and tweak it, and you're just putting yourself in a box when you do that instead of just testing as much as you can.
But a lot of players start that way.
And they enjoy it.
John started with his dirty... with his dirty something deck that was his pet.
Dirty
deck.
Girl.
Awful. Oh, it's, Dirty Girl.
Excuse me.
Oh, you haven't read my blog, Seth? Oh.
You have a blog, number one, and number two, what is Dirty Girl?
Dirty Girl's the first deck I fell in love with and took to a tournament and won. And Dirty Girl was a deck that I kind of got off Jonathan Benton. And I wrote a post to new players to talk about exactly what you're talking about, how they fall in love with a deck, and I called it deck marriage. And it's like the process that happens to new players that get sucked in to a deck. And I kind of wrote at the end that I realize I do it, but I do it anyways because I enjoy it. And, you know, if people are going to take an example of having fun at Game of Thrones from me, great.
No, I agree. I actually do it too, though. I mean, I love Vera Black Sails.
And
I... But like, you have you noticed I haven't brought it to a tournament since that world?
You almost brought it to a tournament. I had to.
I almost did, but you know, I can't bring it to. You know me. At the end of the day, I'm like super Jamie. Like I want.
That's true, Steve. You brought it to DC region.
Yeah, you did. That's right.
All right. But okay.
And you were the one who was writing down our deck. You started the story when you were working with Josh. You were writing down our deck.
For me, this is just me and not other players. They shouldn't feel this way. But I don't consider, like, regionals tournaments. Like, for me, personally.
No, they're not.
Yeah. Like,
I consider Gen Con and Worlds what I go to every year.
Those are what I consider tournaments as well. I think the store championships, it's more fun atmosphere. You can bring a
fun
deck.
That's just for fun, yeah. Play whatever you want at those store championships.
There's a link to my blog, Seth, that you can read about Dirty Girl.
Oh, because I just Googled John Dirty Girl, and I got some weird things came up.
Well, you had to use Dark Nodge. Dark Nodge, How I Married a Dirty
Nodge,
Girl.
The Nodge, dude. It's the Nodge.
Now, there's a player that we talked to, actually. This came from Dennis Harrison, and I thought it was surprisingly insightful, not because he's not insightful, but it really hit the nail on the head. He said that a lot of players start off by picking a bad deck, and then they like it, they refine it to the point where it's as good as it can possibly get, they're really proud of it, they play that deck for a while, and then if they progress, then they tend to progress to what they think is the highest absolute power level deck, the deck with the most efficient cards, the deck that is, you know, just, as far as they can tell, the best deck, and that's the sort of second stage. And then the third stage, as he put it, was, and I think you guys are going to disagree with this, but I did, was the point where you progress to picking the best deck for the tournament you expect, rather than picking the absolute best deck. And I think by those criteria, Dennis would call you guys stuck at the second level, where you're picking the absolute best deck rather than the best deck for the tournament. And
yeah, for us.
However, that's the way that he felt that he progressed as a player, where he'd wound up picking some bad
deck. The one caveat is I truly feel this, that we pick the best deck for the current restricted list. I don't really care about the players. I pick the best. That's how I feel. I pick the best deck for the current restricted list.
Because especially now there's no new cards being introduced, that's all that's really important.
Okay. You pick the deck for the best deck for the current restricted list. I think that everyone would agree that the year that you went to the final table at Worlds, the best deck in that tournament was not yours.
And let me explain that. So we had a disagreement the night before. There wasn't a lot of time when that restricted list came out to do testing. Vera Knights of the Hollow Hill was what Corey was trying to give me, saying it was the best deck. And then Greg Atkinson had that sick deck too.
That's the one I'm referring to. Yeah.
You know, and I think that might have been the best deck. But for me, what I thought was the best deck was a deck where you could pull Narrow Escape from the Hold. Because I believe that, and as you saw in the top four game, I don't know if you watched me take shellack that Baron Knights of the Hollow Hill deck. I would have done this like
12 minutes.
Because Greg, if I would have got a chance to play him, he probably wouldn't have known what was coming when he tried to Valar me and he was going to be in a bad position. So I actually did think I picked the best deck for the meta there. I just think that I got outplayed that year.
I think the best
deck. Wait, Simone, I thought you never won due to being outplayed or player mistakes.
No. I never lost for player mistakes. I think Alvaro played really well, and, you know, gave him my best shot. We now know that that was not the best deck there.
It makes sense. We all agree that...
To recap, I think we all agree that Metacall is definitely in last place.
Yes. And then I think the difference between a great deck and a great player and the difference it makes in a tournament might be marginal. You know, maybe it depends on each individual and how much a great player that practices with the deck a lot and gets to know it, probably. But if you're building that deck yourself and you're loving it, you already know it. So, I mean, that kind of crosses that line between the two. So maybe I might be changing my point of view here and signing with Seth.
Interesting.
I was saying, I talked to Steve before we came on. We were talking about what we thought in this issue, and one of the points we came up with is that you can't really pursue player skill when you prepare for tournaments very effectively, the best way to become a better player, to pursue player skill in preparing for tournaments, is to try and hunt down the best decks, is to test as a deck builder rather than player skill. Like, if you don't allow takebacks, and you invest your ego in games, and you try and win every game you practice, you're holding yourself back. If you just chase the best decks, then suddenly you'll find yourself down against a Greyjoy deck and be like, man, yeah. I tested out. I know exactly how that works. I know what he's trying to do. How do I, you know, I wasn't trying to become this great player, but now I understand what these decks do, and I am better for that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective, Seth, because I went down to New York this year and tested. One of my friends here from Ottawa came down, Sean Memberly, Thesaurus Rex, and he came down with me at the last minute. When he played and we left, I said, so what did you get from that? You know, we didn't really end up picking a deck at the end. He said, I got to play some really good players. They helped me if I made mistakes. They allowed takebacks. We didn't play the whole matches, but I played like, you know, 70, 80 games a day on all these different decks, you know, 20, 30, 40 different decks. And now I have a feel for all of them. And I know their strengths and I know their weaknesses because I was the pilot that was winning or losing with them. And so if I run into this at a tournament, it's going to be pure value. I think it was super productive. And I said, great. I'm glad you know, you got a productive thing. But it was exactly that. You became a better player just by playing like a billion games. And they weren't even full games. They were 1-2 plots maybe, right? Until that tipping point, that key that you say, okay, at this point, this deck's won. And here's why. I assume that's what DC does in his testing as well.
Yeah, and with the small community thing, it's tough for other players. And I think people have griped about this on the forums, and I agree with them. I sympathize. Like, you can't get to a good level of player skill, or you can't even build a good deck without a big group. You can't.
You can't test properly. You can build a good deck. People can stumble on a good deck right away, get lucky,
or maybe
smart.
You could throw all the efficient start cards in the deck and, you know, throw in Fear of Winter and win some games. Yeah. Sure.
I'm guessing that Steven Simone is going to get Withering Cold reprinted as basically a Fear of Winter in second edition.
Actually, I was talking to Nate about the reprint of my card. I'm not a card designer or game designer, so he's going to do whatever he wants, I told him, and I respect Nate. I think he'll do a good job whatever he picks.
He's got to make it Fear of Winter. It's going to be awesome.
You know what, it would be cool if it got renamed?
No, wait, can I just say why I don't like Fear of Winter before you go in? It's sure. It's one of those cards that it says, I don't believe in myself as a player. I want to reduce all the choices in this following round down to one choice because it says I need to reduce all the choices this round because I can't handle other cards. Like, I can't handle any tricks. I can't play. I need to reduce all the choices and just try to smash them with two claim and close my eyes and hope I win.
You know, the greatest look on someone's face is when they have this huge plan and they're thinking 20 maybe 30 rounds in the future, and they're going to grind you out, and then they just eat your Fear of Winter and lose because they're not good enough to stop you. They're not good enough to play around that Fear of Winter. They're not good enough to figure that out. That's awesome, man. That's a good feeling.
I know when Fear of Winter is coming.
No, you don't.
Fear of Winter is coming.
Yeah, I definitely do.
But that, for instance, precludes the ability to bring characters back from the discard or out from shadows that can still change the game state. I mean, it's not completely locking down the game state. And
No.
That's your advantage.
It's just a dumb card that's not good for the game.
You know what, Simone? Just for you.
Go into it.
I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna make a plot with my gut design. It's gonna be called A Child's Game, and it's basically gonna be Fear of Winter, and it's gonna have your face.
Corey told me. He told me that's great. I love that. Corey told me to not come on this podcast and talk about Fear of Winter like I always do, because it's just going to make people play Fear of Winter at Worlds because they'll realize that here's a card that Steve hates. I have a chance to beat him if I put this in my deck.
It's true, though.
I think that's an interesting thing, is if you're not part of a meta that can hunt down the best deck, if you don't have a bunch of other good players.
You may as well play Fear of Winter.
There are certain kinds of decks you can build. Like, Fear of Winter is a deck where you're probably always going to win more than 50% of your games, because as soon as you get ahead, you have this amazing play. You have great
plays
to make.
You hold yourself ahead. Yep.
Yeah, so it's like, if there's a new FAQ and I had to play in a tournament tomorrow and I didn't even get a chance to build, I would be tempted to play a Fear of Winter deck.
And then, you know what I'm going to do right now to even goad Corey more and make him hate me more? Is anyone who beats me with Fear of Winter, at this at Worlds this year, I'll what should I do, Naj? Buy a car bomb for a bunch of people or do, take a shot? What should I do?
No, you're not allowed to do those things anymore, Simone.
Yeah,
I'm going to watch out for you from now on whenever we go drinking. I have to watch make sure you're not drinking with the other people. I think you should buy them a pitcher of beer if you're that sure of yourself.
Ooh. Yeah. If you beat me with Fear of Winter at this tournament, you get a pitcher of beer. So put it all on your decks, guys. Let's go. Let's get on with it.
For the chance that you might get paired against Simone and win. Is this in Mealy and Jost?
Yeah, both.
Oh, anyone that wants a good Fear Winter Mealy deck, contact Dark Notch.
Dude, oh, yeah, no. Notch, we have...
But the deck that I took to Canadian Nationals and won with it Mealy had Fear Winter. It was the basis of the deck. What do you think of that, Seth?
Yeah, turn two Fear Winter.
Yep.
In Melee? Melee's not a real game. I don't really have anything to say about that.
That's not true.
Melee's not true. Melee's a real game.
Melee's pro Melee. So
3-1, democracy owns you.
Dude, Melee's a real game. You know why Melee's a real game? Because the same people basically always make the cut, which means you know it's balanced.
I have to agree with Simone. You can look over in the cut and you will see Chadwick there, sitting in the top 16 with his feet up somewhere. You'll see Simone, of course.
Minaj. It's true.
Yeah. It's you could name like 8 of the 16.
Yeah, that's true.
I have a question based on this segment talking about skill versus deck building. Do you think that what would you do if, like, if you listen to this and you agree, we basically are saying they're close or possibly skill is ahead. How do you pursue that in deck building? Do you, John and Alex, agree with Steve and I that if you want to, if you believe that skill is more important, can you pursue that by playing a deck that plays from behind? Like, what advice can we take?
You know what? You have to play all the different types of decks, Seth. You can't just only focus on the long game, play from behind, because you need to understand the short game decks, too, and the rush decks, and the tempo decks, and the aggro decks. And you're just trying to make me read my... Yeah, you got to build them all. You got to play them all. And you actually have to know what all those things mean. Like, when I say tempo, what is a tempo deck? A beginning player needs to... find the definitions, understand the differences, and, you know, just reading about it and saying, oh, a tempo deck is one that, you know, slowly pressures your opponent and tries to do this and that, doesn't give you a flavor. You got to play it to understand it. So you got to pick up, like, maybe you go online, maybe you find a really strong tempo deck that's already posted, you take it, you play it, you feel what a tempo deck is, then you refine, you build your own, you play all those games with a bunch of different tempo decks, then you move on to another archetype until you got them all. That's what I would do if I was a starting player and I wanted to learn it. And I would choose the easy archetypes first, like you were saying, Seth, like a heavy aggro, because it's easiest to play. And then I would move into a tempo. And then I would move into a control. And then maybe I would move into, like, you know, a combo deck of some kind.
I think, Seth, there is a kind of card that we occasionally call on this cast a Bruno card. And and those, what we mean by those are they're specifically cards that give a disproportionate advantage the better the player. And there are simple, I mean, it doesn't have to be a good card or a bad card in and of itself. For instance, Aegon's Hill is a good card, and yet it is even better in the hands of a good player. Because the information you're going to remember from their hand, and you can play around it.
And you can understand what that information means and how it's going to affect the game. And two,
right. And I'll say the same thing for Waste Their Time, which John Bruno was running in his deck. I would be perfectly happy calling it a bad card. I'm still calling it a Bruno card because it's a card to which the skill differential is much higher.
And we also call, can you guys start calling DC cards any card that has the word draw in its text?
Nightmares is another good example. Nightmares is a great card all the time, but it's a better card the higher the skill of the player. Because you'll know when to use it, you know what, and you know when not to. I remember playing Steven.
That's a fair call. Yeah.
In a game, and he had Nightmares, and he looked at the board state, and he's like, hey, my word, it was out, he's kind of choked. I'm going to use this, actually, in the marshalling phase, during my marshalling turn, to further choke him to blank that location, because I know that one gold is worth more than me affecting the board state in challenges right now. And he was absolutely right. I wasn't able to play that key card I needed because of that.
But then I got ahead.
But I think that's true. I think there are certain cards that are easier to play or harder to get wrong in their use. The Red Viper, for instance, I would say is a card that is very easy to play. And I think there are cards that are much harder to play or that even if they're easy to play, they're harder to get the full use out of.
You also got to consider about player skill, cards that are easy to play around. You can actually play around Some players are good to play around even good cards.
But don't tell the secrets.
I'm not telling all the secrets, but you can play around certain things.
There's and knowing how to you play. Mentioned it earlier. Narrow Escape, I think, is a very high skill cap card.
Yeah,
I think it has some extremely fine uses that I don't think a new player using it as an anti-valor card is
understanding.
Is understanding.
Most of its value isn't in anti-valor. It's in changing that one, killing that one guy for military claim that you're then going to narrow escape, who's going to come back, and now he's not kneeling because he blocked out of the chalice. You're going to attack. Yeah, exactly. And that makes all the difference. And it's those types of interactions that I agree, show a player's skill.
Yeah, so we all agree that if you don't have time to test like that and become a great player before Worlds, Fear of Winter.
Fear of Winter.
There's other, you don't need to have Fear of Winter. There's other decks that are easier to play.
No, I'm using Fear of Winter as a catch-all for a lot of those types of cards.
I think that's true. There are a lot of decks, and I'll take another one that I think is a very good deck, at Siege of Winterfell. It's a good deck, but it plays very similarly from matchup to matchup. It's not terribly dependent on your opponent's situation.
You don't make a lot of decisions. You play it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great deck. I think that's a great deck for... Do you think that if you're this happened at Worlds. John was sick. He was making terrible play mistakes in testing.
Oh my God,
so
bad.
He was basically dying, and he said, which deck should I play? The Targ Black Sails that we've been working on, or the Siege of Winter? And I said, you got to play the Siege of Winterfell, because you're at a point where you're not going to be playing the Targ Black Sails well.
I couldn't even play the Siege of Winterfell well.
I wish I was...
All right, guys, thanks a lot for coming on the cast.
Well, John, it's about that time. People have started asking us repeatedly what we think is going to be on the restricted list for the World's FAQ, or even if there is going to be one.
Well, I think there has to be one. I mean, otherwise the meta would be extremely stale and everyone could just take Baromaesters, Targ AAA, and Pit to them, for the tournament, and that wouldn't be very fun.
I've heard three different approaches, and obviously there's one that I favor most. One was... they should release an FAQ that changes a few things to make the game a little bit more like 2.0. And so this was something like allowing second copies of plots or making attachments setupable and bounce to hand. I'm not a big fan of that. I would say Game of Thrones 1.0 should end as 1.0. 2.0 is different.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but I agree. I don't think you should try to force fit 2.0 into 1.0. But what I would like to see is a really big shakeup. I'd like to 1.0 end in a meta that is completely different and not just some minor tweaks. But you know what they're going to do?
I've heard that big tweaks version, and I actually don't agree with it. I think 2.0 should finish off in the same way as if it wasn't finishing off. This tournament should be taken seriously. It should be done.
They're going to release five more chapter packs?
Well, no, but it's...
Well, then you don't have the same changes. Then it can't finish off because the meta changed between Gen Con and World with the release of chapter packs. When they decided not to release any more chapter packs, you can't finish it off the same. You can't approach the restricted list the same because the chapter packs aren't coming out to make the meta new. The only way you can revive the meta and make it new is to make big changes.
I don't think you need to make big changes. I think you need to make changes, but keep in mind that adding two or three chapter packs, which wasn't always the case in between Gen Con and Worlds, because we've had delays of chapter packs within those areas anyway. But
we
even if
got
you're
at
adding two or three packs, and no, we didn't always get at least three, even if you're adding three packs, that's 60 cards to a pool that was about 1,600. It's a very small change. Removing two or three cards from the restricted list or adding two or three cards to the restricted list is just as big a change as adding 60 cards to the pool at that point.
I would agree with that. So let's say that a restricted list, you normally add three cards and take off a card, and then you'd have three packs, which is the same as adding three cards and taking off a card.
Right,
so we should see six cards on and two cards off.
And you may notice I have a cold and I'm like, that's also why my laugh sounds so weird in the upper segment. I have to stop laughing.
Join the club of death.
So I think we're both agreed, though, that the changes will be fairly small. I don't think we're going to see Valor restricted. I don't think we're going to see Burning on the Sands unrestricted. I don't think we're going to see shit hit the fan.
I think we're going to see Pit hit the restricted list.
What? No. Why would Pit hit the list?
So that
I would
Pit and
Threat from the North will be
used together.
Both the Farrah deck
No, that's a mistake. No. No. Why would they put threat? Threat would cripple other decks. Well, Pit would just fix the problem. The Barret deck isn't a problem. The Barret deck could replace threat with that stupid attachment that would do the same thing. Putting threat on the list doesn't fix the Barret deck.
I agree. I actually think two changes need to be made of adding things on. And one is to deal with some of these Maester elements, including Stark Maesters, which has been doing very well in the last couple of European tournaments. And so I would say we handle the Maester problem, and I would say that we do something to bring Dragon Pit down. But my choice would be, since it overlaps with the Barret Maesters, to restrict the threat from the north, which is what I've heard a lot of people suggest as well, and then get something else that sort of touches on both of the Maester decks. I'm tempted to that one for me is trickier, because one of the aspects I don't like about the Stark Maester deck is the trait manipulation into Dissension kind of thing, but I don't think you can restrict Dissension, no. And I don't think you can restrict the Copperlink. Well, you can, but it doesn't matter with Old Man.
You could just restrict the Draw Link, because that's what's driving both those decks. All the Maester decks
are
driven
from
the draw. So if I was doing the restricted list, I'd say the Pit hits, the Draw Link hits, and, you know, I look at a few other things. I'd even look at a few cards coming off, maybe, because I want a bigger change, though. I'm doing that because I want to shake up the meta. That would be my natural inclination.
Taking things off, I think, is a little trickier, because really last FAQ we sort of played with the shuffling. We put the Viper on and took Savas off, and I think we've sort of done that kind of reshuffling recently enough that I'm not sure if there's much more room to do the easy swaps like that.
I think the Veil Refugee could come off.
Yeah, but I don't think that will change the game at all. I mean, it can come off, but I don't think anyone's going to go, yay, I can finally build the Lanny Tunnels deck I used to have that isn't as good anymore anyway.
Well, it would be better now than it was before, but it's still not super tier one. But cards that don't make a difference that are sitting on the restricted list, list then? If you're telling me you could take off Veil Refugee and it wouldn't do anything,
I agree. You could definitely take it off.
So if there's other cards like that, we should just take them off, because maybe they're going to empower something to build a cool deck that we didn't think about that will shake the meta up. So to me, just take that stuff off that we don't think is going to have these huge impacts.
Let me pull up the restricted list that I don't have memorized anymore, because I'm bad at everything now.
Because you're not playing 1.0, you're too much...
Which, of course, lends additional credence to everything I say, right? You should all take it very seriously, because...
Well, why don't you just read through it and we'll see. We'll see what my gut reactions
Brent
are
Stark
to each card.
Stays. The Kaish stays. Yeah. The three Furies that are on there right now stay. Tavia Dragon stays. It went on there too recently. Castellan of the Rock stays. Veil Refugee comes off. Street Waif.
You know what? If we're going to put Threat on, Street Waif can come off.
I mean, we're not in the same decks, but I could... Given that To Be a Dragon is on the restricted list, we could potentially see taking Street Waif off.
You're not long lasting.
Yeah, we could take Street Waif off. I agree. Red Keep. There was a time to take it off. I don't think this is it.
Keep it on.
Venomous Blade.
Yep.
Fear Winter.
Keep it on.
Naval Escort.
Keep it on.
It could come off now with the changes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Ashlyn's Feast. Yeah.
Keep it on.
It's one that I would debate could come off, especially if Threat goes on.
You know what? You probably saw me with Threat being, no, because then I could use Threat and Feast. They just choose Threat as they're restricted. I think you have to keep Feast on for the 2-2 decks, which will be empowered by one of the other changes I think is going to happen.
All right, Burning on the Sands stays on. Val probably has to stay on.
Stays
Red
on.
Viper can stay on, or for the Green Blood, probably stays on.
Stays
Viper's
on.
Bannerman stays on. Bungled Orders stays on. Narrow Escape stays on. Maester's Path stays on. Tin's Link stays on. Prince's Plan stays on. Search and Detain stays on. Threat from the East. I keep wanting to see what people can do with that one.
It probably could.
Mind you, I thought they'd fixed this last time, and they changed it to Threat from the East, but it's back to Threat from the East. So go ahead and play your Threat from the East.
Yeah, every time they do it.
Art of Seduction. I think that could come off.
Ooh, that would empower Rush. That would be interesting. You know, it could come off because it would change the meta. I like it.
Mira stays on. Red Queen's Faithful stays on. Manning stays on. Pentoshi Manor stays on. Long Lances stays on. Negotiation stays on. Desperate Measures stays on. Blessed by the Maiden stays on. Arian Martell stays on. Preston stays on. Mel Staver stays on. Harry the Riverland stays on. Maiden's Bane, yep, with the new text from... leave it there. We just pulled Naval Escort off. I don't really... I mean, that you're right. It can probably come off.
It can probably come off even with the Naval Escort.
Bloodthirst stays on. Daenerys Targaryen and Wheels Within Wheels stay on.
Stays on.
And that's it.
So we
just pulled six cards off. I agree.
That's a meta change.
That actually fits
that
into your, like, we need to compensate for three packs coming out by pulling off three additional cards.
Yeah, so that's what we would do. So what's FFG going to pull off? Like, nothing?
I don't know.
I'm going to say nothing.
I think they...
FFG fails. They're going to pull nothing
off. I think they will probably pull something off the list. Yeah.
Oh, maybe one thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so they should be pulling six things. They're going to pull one thing. That's good for that.
Right. And I think...
Okay.
So have I sold you on Threat going on instead of Dragon Pit? Because I don't think we need both, obviously.
Why?
And I think Dragon Pit only exists in one deck.
No, it's ridiculous to do both.
So I would not do both.
So if we're... But if we're putting the draw link on, why are we... And the pit. Who cares if Threat goes on? You can't play Maester Pass and Threat. Is that what you're saying? So then that'll stop the Bear Maesters? Like, was Bear Maesters that good?
No, Bear Maesters was pretty good. What
I beat it. It wasn't that hard.
Threat makes for a fairly big meta change.
I guess it means Burn's going to be a lot weaker. I mean, if you throw Harrenhal in there, too, you can just, like, control take over Gen Con or the Worlds or whatever.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a very good idea.
Yeah, that would be the stupidest idea ever. But, I mean, why would we put Threat on? It just doesn't make any sense. Because I was going to say put Harrenhal on, personally. That's why I made that comment. I was going to say put Harrenhal on, leave Threat off, and open up the meta to control, but allow Rush and other things to still have be, you know, viable.
I don't know. I think you're right in that.
I think Harrod Hall's been defining the meta. I'm trying to do big sweeping changes. So I say put that on, and that'll affect the meta.
I think if Harrod Hall comes off, then you have all sorts, or goes on. I think you have all sorts of issues with Sivas and stuff that we've been playing with in a background of that. I mean, that's a big change, and that's not very predictable. That risks, like you said, letting control run amok.
I think it would. I think control would be very prevalent. But if we did the other changes we were talking about, Alex, I think we'd actually see tempo and rush come into play, too. And then we'd have this nice mix.
I can see. If you pull off Art of Seduction and a couple of those other things you're talking about, you might be able to counter that control to some extent. But if they're not going to do it, then... That I don't think they can put Harrenhal.
You can't put Harrenhal in check. Like I said, this is my perfect world. I would have taken those six cards off. I would have put Harrenhal on. I would have put the draw link on, and I would have put on the pit.
I'm still not sold on the pit because it feels like you're restricting a card that only goes into one deck. But I guess it's the deck that you're worried about. It wasn't another burn.
The problem is the deck. Yeah, other burn isn't
you're
doing
right.
well. Right now, and I don't want to remove the archetype, right? Like if I take threat, I cripple that archetype. I take pit, I only fix the problem deck, and pit would
still
run
fine.
They lose
either Preston or it. Some versions were running Fear of Winter, and you're right, they can survive that. There's still the
and it would still be a good deck. It just wouldn't be over the top. So I mean, I'm not crippling the deck. What I'm doing is bringing it in line.
I guess.
And I'm not crippling
But
Threat on, you
I
cripple all these other
that
decks.
It was informing me all along. But I hate or I dislike it when a restricted card is visible at the beginning of the game, like Maester's Path, for instance, because you already know what the restricted is. And I that's kind of something that I would object to with Dragon Pit going on the list, because it's really only played in one deck, and that's where it starts in play. And so you're like, oh, well, now I don't have to wonder which version of this deck he built.
But like you said, Maester's Path already has that.
Yeah, and I don't
so
like
it's the same as all those decks.
Yeah.
Well, but we're trying to dissuade people from playing Pit, right? We're trying to change the meta.
Well,
and the best way to do that is just restrict
Pit. As I think you said, I think regardless of which of those two we go with, we still leave Pit with a viable build. It doesn't matter whether it's threat.
Yeah, but here's the other thing, that if we put threat on, we're going to hurt Targ 222, which has been doing great. We're going to hurt all this other Targ burn, you know, Harpy Scourge, the Lanny burn. None of these are doing great. Like, why hurt those decks as well? It just doesn't make sense to me.
All right. You sold me. You've convinced me. I'm too easy to convince. I'm soft on 1.0. Go ahead. And wait, while you're at it, you should suggest Erratum. Just to see whether I'm still me or not.
Why would I errata anything?
Well, I'm glad I've converted you, if nobody else.
Oh, God. If FFG errata something, they'll have to now, because you've mentioned it. Great, Alex.
I'm glad to see your vote of confidence in FFG. Second thing
it's still diminishing with every restricted list.
I wanted to bring up is the melee restricted list, and whether you think that requires any changes.
Yes.
You do.
They have to hit that. Oh, yeah.
And what do they need to hit?
They actually have to hit that Greyjoy deck that DC brought. It's like, I playtested it prior to Gen Con, and it was one of our top decks because it was so resilient. So I think they have to do something about that. They might want to look at that new ship that gains power from unopposed and putting that on the restricted list to dial it back.
I mean, I've seen a couple of melees since then, the ones in UK Nationals and so on.
Has anyone playing that year on Greyjoy deck?
Yes, yeah. I think Vince, who's a superb melee player, world-class melee player, just absolutely phenomenal, was playing that, and you know, he was still beaten at the final table by James. I think it's a strong deck, but I don't think it's a problem. I mean, for instance, at that melee table at Gen Con, I think the best chance to win was Corey. And he wasn't playing that deck.
No, he was playing the Thraki, which is another strong deck.
I mean, if anything, I might pick out...
I might be a little bit...
Sore?
No, I'm not going to say sore. I'm going to say I've played...
Okay.
I've,
it sounds like sore. Does it rhyme with sore?
I've played that Greyjoy deck a little bit more and made some changes. And it's really strong with those changes.
So you would restrict the...
I'd restrict the boat just from my after Gen Con playtesting, because I had a little bit more time to think on it, and I think that deck is probably the best deck in the meta with those changes. That's my feeling. Okay. I mean, I might be wrong. I only play a small set of people, close friends that are in my area that, you know, always changes things. I haven't had a lot of exposure. I'm not playing, you know, James-level players or Corey Faraday-level players, but feel strong. Too strong.
And would you want to touch, say, Corey's deck by maybe restricting the Dothraki who can get you, like, a 7-power swing?
You know what? No.
No. Okay.
Yeah. I played that deck as well, and it doesn't feel as strong. And it's harder to play. So
it is harder to play. I do agree on that.
Decks that are harder to play, I'm more forgiving if they're really strong.
Okay.
Yeah, because they require a good pilot, so I like that. Actually, I prefer not to restrict those types of decks.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I'm glad you're still thinking about 1.0, or this would have been a very dull segment with me being like, two cards on and nothing else, goodbye.
But you see, agree with 6 cards off.
I did, and I wasn't expecting to, so, yeah.
All right. Rock and roll.
All right. We have to do some closing comments, John. Are you going to tell us about all the tournaments you know about? Did you just finish telling us about all the tournaments?
Done.
I do actually have a couple of tournaments. So we mentioned the Tournoi de la Main, the Tourney of the Hand, which is upcoming, not this weekend, but the weekend after. So that's the 17th and the 18th, as well as some other tournament that same weekend. I believe the Greek Nationals, we mentioned that as well. However, there are a bunch of tournaments in a lot of countries that I can't keep track of, many of them in Kingslayer format, to launch the core. So I specifically had Scantrell from the Atlanta, Georgia region, who was saying that there was one on Tuesday, October 6th at the Gigabytes Cafe and Saturday, October 10th at Titan Comics and Games. So check those out if you're in the Atlanta area. And I also know that throughout all of France, there are Kingslayer tournaments in almost all the major cities. So if you've been involved in the Garde de Nuit, the Night's Watch stuff in France, or you go check out their website, Trône de Fer, JCE, you can find out that they have a lot of these tournaments. I'm sure there are lots of other ones. Like we mentioned, there's the one at FFG on Tuesday this week. your local area may be running one, may not. I don't have the information on all of them. Are we really just going to end on that? There's got to be something we can... No.
There's nothing cool.
There's definitely something else we can end on.
There's no coolness.
There's no coolness? Isn't it cool that all of these people are getting their cores before you are?
No, that's not cool. That's the opposite of cool. I think you've lost track of what is cool in the world, Alex.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
You missed the restricted list.
Oh, the restricted list is like a little tiny blurb.
It's like 15 minutes.
All right. And the restricted list.
You got to be more precise than that.
We're going to talk about the 1.0 restricted list. We're going to discuss the upcoming changes to the 1.0 restricted list.
Yeah, happy now.
Very.